Hi, welcome. In this podcast, we talk B2B marketing and what it takes to know your customer, innovate, and profit. We're glad you made it. This is The Campaign by 97th Floor.
Hello, everyone. Happy Friday. I am Paxton Gray, and this is The Campaign, a B2B marketing podcast about better knowing your audience, innovating beyond best practice, and converting visitors into customers. The Campaign is a weekly conversation with B2B marketing leaders designed to fit as much value as possible within 30 minutes. You can catch The Campaign live on Fridays at 2 Eastern, and you can find past episodes on YouTube, iTunes, Spotify, and at 97floor.com. Today, we were discussing a topic that applies across the board to B2B agencies. It's a common lead gen tactic, but it's one that can be done better, and that is webinars. Webinars have become one of the most powerful tools in a marketer's arsenal, especially in the B2B space. They bridge the gap between brand awareness and direct revenue impact, serving as a conversion machine, but only when done right. Despite their widespread use, most marketers are still getting them wrong. And, what I find in the digital marketing space is that certain channels and tactics kind of have trends, and they're in vogue and then they're out of vogue. And what I've noticed with webinars is sometimes people will do them and it's just kind of rote. Like, this is the way they've always been done, so we're just going to do that this way. But kind of like direct mail, it's a sleeping giant. And if done correctly, and if you innovate, it's kind of a blue ocean despite a lot of people doing them. So what really separates a webinar that actually works from one that just takes up space on a marketer's calendar? In this episode, we're going to dive deep into the evolution of webinars, the biggest mistakes marketers make, and the bold future ahead for virtual events. If you're still treating webinars like glorified PowerPoints, it's time to rethink everything. There's one person who has been ahead of the curve for over a decade on webinars, and that is our guest, Matt Murdock. Matt is the vice president of marketing at Franklin Covey. He's an expert at combining brand building with lead generation strategies that convert to drive unstoppable business growth. He's mastered this balance over the past 20 years, leading teams grounded in purpose and performance. Matt is the author of the Webinar Manifesto, which he wrote over 10 years ago, right as webinars were gaining traction. Now, webinars are a staple of B2B marketing, and Matt is the best at the game. In his time at Franklin Covey, Matt has increased webcast and event registrations by 1,600%, generating millions of dollars in pipeline. Matt, welcome to The Campaign.
Great. Thanks, Paxton. Great to be here.
Yeah. So great to have you. So Matt, let's start at the beginning. You wrote the Webinar Manifesto 10 years ago. What inspired you to write that?
Yeah, it looks like my camera's kind of blurry here. Let me fix that for you. See if I can adjust somehow. Not sure how that.
I'm not sure why it's blurry there.
Let's see if I can fix that by doing this. Sorry, bad introduction, right?
That's all right. Audio is coming through clear, and hopefully in the post, Riverside will give us a clean version.
Okay. So, yeah. So honestly, we wrote this out of sheer frustration. I mean, we saw an opportunity. We sat through too many webinars that felt like a hostage situation, right? It's droning voices, endless slides, no real engagement. And I figured there had to be a better way. And so webinars should be more like great conversations and not endurance tests. And so I wrote the Webinar Manifesto with a colleague of mine to show people how to create great webinars. But frankly, the problem still exists today. And I'm guilty of it for sure. Other people are still have problems. But we wanted to find a way that really dramatically improved the webinar experience because nobody else was doing this. And everyone was just sort of defaulting to what they had access to, the standard platform options. And there was no strategy to really fix this. And thus the book was written. And it's a fine piece of literature, but probably not a Pulitzer Prize winning piece, but it's a great little introduction to webinars.
Yeah. One of the things I like that you identify at the beginning, I mean, it's marketing 101, storytelling 101. You identify kind of a common enemy, and you define that as the webiny. Tell us like, what is a webiny? What is the antithesis to an awesome webinar?
Yeah. So webinars are the things that you do wrong, right? And there's so many things that people do wrong in webinars. And they've persisted over time for as long as webinars have been around. Webinars have been there. There are these little things that just that nag at you all the time, and you have to overcome them. You have to get past those to really be able to produce a really fine webinar.
Hmm. Yeah, I like that. So how have webinars evolved since you started running them over 10 years ago?
Yeah, there's been a couple of big shifts. One of the big shifts is moving from slide first to video first. And in the early days, you had no video, right? It was always just voiceover PowerPoints. And so today everyone's on camera, and you're switching between multiple video feeds. You're using branded overlays and incorporating studio level production values. But perhaps one of the best improvements is we finally acknowledge that people don't necessarily have the attention span for long, boring webinars anymore. Mm. Right? Unless they're secretly watching like The Office or Netflix over on another tab someplace. But modern webinars are typically shorter, they're sharper, they're more digestible. And attendees are expecting more of a polished, engaging experience. No one's sitting through a dry monologue with slides full of bullet points anymore. The best webinars today, they feel more like a professional broadcast with fast pacing, compelling storytelling, which is so important these days, and real audience participation. If there's one thing we've learned since 2005, is that nobody really wants to watch a slow moving PowerPoint, right? Yeah. That's sort of like where we've come from.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of that. Whenever I present, I aim for 3 to 6 seconds per slide. And so if I'm doing a 30-minute presentation, I'll often give decks that are like 180, 200 slides, and the presenter or the event is always like, are you sure? There's like, trust me, I'm going to move quick because people get bored. And so you really have to move to keep their attention. Now, one thing that you write about is some of the key elements that make a webinar successful. How can, like, do you have a framework around that? How can people, what should they be doing within their webinars to engage that audience?
Yeah. So engagement is such a huge thing. It's what it's all about. When you think of it this way, when you're in a physical room, we're naturally accountable to each other, right? So I can tell Paxton if you are dozing off, if you're scrolling through your phone, if you're doodling on the margins of your notebook, right? It's obvious I can tell that you're not engaged. But in a virtual setting, that accountability completely disappears. Nobody knows if you're actively listening or watching. And so you have to like figure out how to pull that attention and that engagement back. So to keep people engaged, you have to build in something I call virtual accountability. And that happens in three key ways. There's verbal, visual, and kinesthetic. So verbal accountability is all about conditioning people from the start. So many people think of webinars like theater, right? You sit in the audience, you're going to kick back. You're just going to just let the show go on without them. But the best webinars make people feel like they're on stage too, right? Make sure people feel like they're engaged with it. So there's a few things you can do. The first thing is a little bit shocking, but it's set expectations up front that you'll be calling people on by name, right? Mm-hmm. Some people are like, whoa, you're going to call somebody on name. That's pretty scary. But then you need to actually do it, right? Because it's the cocktail party effect. You can snap people right back into reality by hearing when they hear their own name. And so that's a big piece of it. The next thing is ask real open-ended questions, not just robotic yes, no questions. Like really get people to spark a conversation. And then my favorite trick is something I call the 10-second rule. So when you ask a question, give people a full 10 seconds of silence to actually answer the question. It's going to feel like an eternity, but that pause forces people to engage and to realize this is going to be an engaging experience. Okay. So some people are going to say, hey, this is going to be impossible with large groups. And just use common sense. You have to use common sense. For example, this week I ran webinars with thousands of people on them. And obviously I'm not going to open up the mic to people and say, yeah, come on in and verbally engage with me. But in sessions of 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 people, you can do this. I've done this. And it adds a lot to the engagement. Okay. So the first thing really is around this verbal accountability. Secondly is around visual accountability. So you want to keep people's eyes on the screen. And if your slides look like a Word document, you're going to be in trouble because people do not remember bullet points. They remember stories, they remember images, those types of things. And so you have to hold their attention in three ways. I call it paint it, burn it, and shun it. Right. The first one is to paint it. You have to tell stories instead of just presenting data. So a great story is going to paint a mental image that really sticks. And second, you've got to burn it into their mind. So use great visuals that are unexpected. They can be bold, but make them really memorable because no one remembers another pie chart, but they're going to remember a striking image that's going to reinforce that story that you just told. And then the third one is to shun it. This one's kind of blunt, but you have to shun bad design. If your slides look like they came from a 1997 PowerPoint template, people are going to check out. So you got to get help from your marketing team in some cases like that. Okay.
Yeah.
So when your attendees are visually engaged, they're also going to be mentally engaged, and you're giving them a chance to stay on the webinar instead of multitasking. Okay. And then the third thing we talk about is kinesthetic accountability. You want to get them moving. So the third element is around keeping their body in motion, right? We know Newton's first law of motion says an object at rest stays at rest, and that includes webinar attendees. Right? So if they're sitting passively, you're going to lose them. So you got to keep them engaged. You need to keep them moving physically and mentally. And so a couple of things you can do on this, I call it play, push, and pull. So for play, give them a short task to do. Like have them leave for 30 seconds. Have them go do a puzzle or solve a problem and then come back and report to the group. It makes them feel like an active participant. And then for push, use polls, whiteboards, chat as much as you want, right? Don't be afraid to overuse them because I believe that people want to interact. They want to be part of the conversation. So presenters could use more of these. And then for poll, pull in content from other sources. Have them go to Google. Have them search something and come back and report on what they discussed, right? So it's that kinesthetic movement. It's getting them to do things with their hands to get them engaged. So play, push, and pull. Because what I found is that when people are active, that's what they're going to remember, right? Rather than the things they're just passively hearing, okay?
Right.
So when you combine all three forms of accountability, verbal, visual, and kinesthetic, you're going to create an experience where engagement isn't optional, right? It's a requirement.
Right. It seems to me too that if you're doing all of this, what you're doing is you're building a little mini community where people are engaging and they are contributing to where this thing goes. Is that accurate from your experience?
Yeah, absolutely. You're creating a community. You're creating an opportunity for people to connect, to really understand what other people are talking about. And that gives you as the marketer the opportunity to really, gives you the opportunity to hear what they have to say and be more engaged with you. You can glean a lot of information from conversations in those types of situations for sure.
Yeah, I love this framework. And this is something that we are for sure going to be applying here on the campaign. And, but I assume you can't really have a solid engagement framework or ways that you're going to do that without great planning. So what are some of the, starting at the beginning of when you're going to be doing a webinar, you're in the planning phase, what are some of the biggest mistakes that marketers make when they're in that planning phase?
Well, in the planning phase, it's really interesting. You've got to, when you're planning your webinar, you've got to be sure that you are taking the time to plan it properly. I mean, think about what your audience, what their problems are, and then develop your webinar around that. Okay. So I think a lot of the time we think, if you build it, they will come, and spoiler alert, they're not going to, right? You have to build it and market it like your job depends on it, because it really does, right? This is what you're doing. So you're marketing a product. It just happens to be a webcast. And so you got to think of all the things that go into that product. And go back to the basics of marketing. Boil it down to your market, your message, and your media. Who are you trying to target? What's the message that's going to resonate with them? Like, what are the problems they're faced with? So I think that's one of the biggest things is you have to address their problems. And that goes into the marketing, but it also goes into the development or the production of the actual webinar, right? Make sure that what you're talking about is really what they want to hear about. And then, make sure you're promoting it in the right way, right? What's the media you're using? Use all the channels you've got, get it out there to the world. But when you're developing your webinar, ideally what you want to do is think around the problem you're trying to solve, right? Design your webinar, and then if you can, run a beta test for it. Make sure that it's what people really want to hear. Use that feedback, improve, iterate, and then build a memorable experience for people, right? Mm-hmm. So those are some of the key foundational pieces you want to do when you're building your webinar.
Yeah, I like that. In your experience, are most of, Franklin Covey is full of subject matter experts. I mean, that essentially is Franklin Covey, is subject matter expertise. Are most of your webinars taking place with internal subject matter experts? Are you working with external SMEs as you plan these webinars?
Yeah, so we do most of ours with internal subject matter experts. So we do have a lot of consultants and experts, and so we tap into their brains and their experience to help us build them out. And that's a key piece of it for sure. Like if you don't have the expertise around the topic, go find somebody that does and work with them and help them understand the problem you're trying to solve and get their involvement. So yeah, we have a lot of subject matter experts that I'm working with all the time and my team's working with to actually create these webinars.
Sure. Yeah. So obviously, we go through the planning phase, we figure out how we're going to engage them verbally, visually, kinesthetically. Now it comes time to get the word out about what we're going to be running. What are some of the best ways that you have found in your experience over the past 10 years of driving attendance to webinars? How do you get people in the seats?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's always a tough one, right? So it's sort of like two steps. Number one, you need to market it like it's a Taylor Swift concert. And number two, don't be boring, right?
Yeah.
But a good promotion is going to start with a killer title. So no one's going to sign up for something that doesn't resonate with them. So, like a deep dive into Q3 metrics is not a great title. You got to think of what's going to resonate, like, how to fix the three most expensive marketing mistakes you're making, right? Something more like that. But it has to directly relate back to the pain point your audience is feeling. So the title is going to be a really big piece of it. Mm-hmm. And then use email, social media, your partners, every channel you've got, and then you just have to remind people multiple times, because signing up doesn't necessarily mean showing up. And to be realistic, on average, you're going to get 35 to 50% that attend, 60% if you're super, super lucky. Mm-hmm. But I would actually caution you to think a little bit differently about this, because attendance is good, right? We all want people to attend. But the real key here is registrations. Mm-hmm. When someone signs up for your webinar, they're basically raising their hand and saying, hey, I've got a problem, and I think you might have the answer. And in today's world, where we're also incredibly busy, getting someone to actually willingly give you 45 minutes to an hour of their day, like out of their incredibly busy week, that's an amazing feat if you're able to do that. But just to be clear, you haven't won yet, right? Because your registrants, they're on a mission for answers. And if you take too long to deliver on those answers they're seeking, they're not going to wait around, right? They're going to go elsewhere. So here's the kicker, and we've all heard the statistic before in marketing, but 35 to 50% of your sales go to the vendor that responds first, right? We've heard this.
Yeah.
So what does that mean? That means if you don't engage quickly, your competitor is going to. And in the race to win business, speed is it's critical, right, Paxton? It's like you've got to get out there first. And so webinars actually give you the chance to be first in line, to serve up the right content at the right moment before your competitors even realize there's a conversation happening. Mm. Now, I think one of the big things that people don't realize, though, is the clock starts ticking once somebody registers, right? That is when the clock starts ticking, not when the webinar ends. And so by the time your event rolls around, right, like we said, half your registrations, they're not even going to show up. Why? They forgot. Their boss called them into another meeting, or worst case, they solved their problem through another vendor, right? Mm-hmm. So at the time of registration, you've got to follow up. You got to get right on them immediately, get your salespeople following up immediately, engage with them, give them a reason to stick with you before they wander off someplace else. Because at the end of the day, the company that gives the value, the best value first, is going to be that company that wins.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question that's maybe a little bit off the wall, which is, you had said like it begins at registration. I love that way of thinking. And you said that in the context of this webinar ultimately should be designed to convert this person into a customer, which that's why we're expending all these resources on a webinar, right? So that should not be lost. One of the most common complaints with webinars is that they are often really salesy. So how do you, Matt, balance that, walk that line between this is informational and helpful on its own, but this also needs to provide benefit to my organization. Otherwise, it's not worth investing all this time and resources into this. Do you have any kind of guide or how do you think about that?
Yeah, it's a great point because many webinars are just glorified sales presentations, right? Nobody mm-hmm. wants that. Mm-hmm. People are coming to get value. And it's our job as marketers to provide that value. Like I said, they're coming to solve a problem. And so you need to give them solutions to that problem without giving away the whole solution. You have to give them enough to get them to actually take your call when you call them back. And so there's a fine line between that, right? You may be a service company or a content company, and you don't want to give away all that information, right? You can't.
Right.
But you've got to work with your sales team, make sure you're on the same page with that. But it's so critical because that's what people want. And if you give them some value, they're going to appreciate that a lot, right?
Yeah.
They're going to appreciate it. They're going to remember that you gave them that value and they're going to come back to you. So yeah. I think that's a very, very important part of it.
Now, the benefit for the organization of that webinar is not limited to the day of that webinar itself. Meaning the people who are watching that content live. Like, what's your take on demand versus live webinars?
Yeah. Here's the way I look at it. So a live webinar is like going to a concert, right? It can be exciting. It's unpredictable. It's full of potential. You don't really know what's going to happen. And on-demand webinars are more like Netflix. They're convenient. They're bingeable, right? There's no pressure to them. And the reality is you need both. As marketers, you need to have both of these. So live webinars, they create this real-time engagement, this urgency that people really want. And the on-demand webinars, they extend the life of your content and let busy people watch when they can. So, you know, host it live and then repurpose it like a pro, right? Clip it, put it on social media, send it out an email, put it on your website, use it wherever you can. It's, you know, it's content that you now have and put it everywhere you can. Again, the goal is to help answer questions in the moment of need. So when someone's coming, when do they get that question? Is it going to be, you know, because you have an on-demand webcast on your website, or do they have to wait 3 or 4 weeks to get the live webcast, the live webinar? And, yeah. You know, so it gives you that opportunity to talk to them and give them that information right away because they could miss out or they could go to another vendor in that 3 weeks until your webinar happens. And so it goes back to, you know, hit them quick and just make sure that you have the content out there. So for on-demand, I'm all for them. I think they can really help generate leads and they can really progress your sales and give your prospects and your clients the things that they really need in the moment of need.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. So much opportunity to be had beyond just the actual live event, if you're smart about it. At Nice Up and Floor, one of our core beliefs is that great marketing stems from really understanding an audience and is not so focused on a channel. Like if you get too focused on a channel and you get those blinders on, marketers tend to follow just best practice and they often blindly go into directions that the audience just don't engage with. And so what we've learned is, can you learn insights about this audience so that you can use these channels in new creative ways? I love it when I see marketers taking old or very well used channels or methods and then just turning them on their head and using them in completely brand new ways. What are some of the ways that you are seeing creative companies using webinars today that are breaking the mold from 10 years ago?
Yeah, I mean, it's really amazing what's happening today with webinars. And for example, this week, my team produced a webinar this week with Kim Scott. She's the author of Radical Candor. And we had thousands of people on, and she did something really interesting. She presented for 25 minutes, and then she took Q&A for 15 minutes, and then she presented for another 25 minutes, and then did Q&A again. Mm-hmm. And what that did is it really broke up the session. And you know, when you're learning something new or hearing something, you get cognitive load. Like your brain can only absorb so much information before it can't absorb anymore. And so when she did this, what she did was she broke up that cognitive load, right? Mm. And she reduced the cognitive load that builds up. So I thought that was a really creative thing that she did that I saw this week. Now, other companies are turning webinars into interactive experiences, right? Think like live product demos, interactive Q&As. And I've even seen and heard of a couple of game show style formats, which I've not done yet, but that would be a really interesting thing.
Wow.
In the future.
Yeah.
But one of my favorites that I heard about was, it was a company that did a choose your own adventure style webinar where the attendees voted in real time on what topic the speaker should cover next. And so, you know, fun, engaging, it keeps people glued to the session. And I think the key for to take a kind of a legacy medium like webinars, but the key is to really make it something that people want to attend and not something that they have to endure. Right. So make it fun for them, make it really interesting and give them the right content that they want.
Yeah. And the same is true for marketers, like have fun doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, break the mold because it's just fun to do that. And if you're having fun, the chances of your audience engaging and having fun with that content go way up.
Yeah.
I love that. So in terms of trends and where things are moving, like where do you see webcasts, webinars, virtual events moving? What are some of the things that brands should be thinking about as they plan out their strategy for this year and next year?
You know, it's interesting. I've read a lot of reports and seen a lot of things. Lots of people are saying shorter, snackable content, right? Mm-hmm. That's one of the big things. Like people don't have time for 60-minute webinars anymore. They want micro webinars. I was on stage a few years ago with, you know, a couple thousand people, and the moderator asked me a simple question that I'd never thought of before. He said, is there a reason why you can't have an 11-minute webinar? And, you know, besides the fact that people are always 5 minutes late, right? They're going to miss half of it. The answer is no. You know, shorter webinars can get you right to the point. And, you know, give them a shot, right? Let's try out new things. And, you know, produce your webinar based off of the content you have, not an arbitrary length of time. Now, I say that, and this week we ran some webinars. They're all 90 minutes each. And people were engaged through the whole thing. And so I think if you design it well, if you have great engaging speakers, I think you don't have to have shorter snackable content, right? People want sometimes to really get in depth and get deeper into topics. So use your best judgment and just figure out, you know, what does your content really need to breathe? Is it shorter? Is it longer? And then just, and go with whatever it seems to be. Okay.
Yeah. So in order of operations or priority, it's engagement and providing that value.
Yeah.
And way down that list is going to be how long should it be? But the length is dependent on the first priority. Yeah.
Yep.
Exactly. Any bold predictions about the future of webinars to wrap things up?
Yeah. So bold predictions. I think webinars have a big opportunity to become more like TV shows. Mm. I think the best companies are going to be creating things like episodic webinar series. Think like The Office, but for B2B, right? I think it could be a really fun way for a brand to get their message out there and make it a lot more engaging, get people to tune in, you know, every week or, you know, release a whole, you know, series of them. I think also we're going to see more highly produced, engaging, binge-worthy content. Right. Mm-hmm. So if your webinar feels like a Zoom meeting with slides, then you're probably already outdated. Right. The future is going to really belong to these brands that make webcasting more entertaining, educational, and impossible to ignore. I think there's just a huge opportunity out there for this medium.
Yeah. Fascinating. And especially in the B2B space. I mean, that's for some people saying B2B is cue to tune out. Or, you know, they would much rather read a fantasy book versus a business book. And so can you replicate what the fantasy book or what the TV show is doing in order to engage and delight and educate and provide value to that audience? I love that. I can't wait to see how that develops moving forward. Sign me up, to be honest.
Sounds good. Well, I'll let you know if you ever create one of those.
Yeah, I love it. Great. So to wrap up, I want to list some key takeaways for our audience that I had jotted down as we were discussing. And I've got quite a handful this episode because there was a lot of value. One is webinars. They should be shorter and feel more like a professional broadcast. The verbal, visual, and kinesthetic framework for how to engage an audience. I love that on the visual side, the paint it, burn it, or shun it. And then kinesthetic, the play, push, and pull, just like really engaging them and bringing them into the webinar and the community of the webinar, calling them by name, which I have not seen in webinars before, but that creates what you call the cocktail party effect, where everyone's anticipating that their name may be called and they're ready for it. And then when they do, they engage. The 10-second rule of giving people 10 seconds of silence to answer a question and really waiting for that and not feeling the need to fill that silence. Giving them the answers to their questions that they signed up for quickly and engaging them quickly. And then thinking about what your content needs to breathe rather than focus on any arbitrary time frame. I love some really great takeaways. Thank you all for joining. If you'd like to connect with Matt on LinkedIn, he'd be happy to chat about webinars and what you're doing. So reach out to Matt on LinkedIn. Tune in next week. We're going to be joined by Eli Schwartz. We're discussing how organizations can stay relevant in 2025 by shifting their organic strategy from Google obsessed SEO to user obsessed SEO. So that should be a great one. Matt, thank you so much for joining. This has been a pleasure talking with you.
You bet. Thank you, Paxton. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening. The Campaign is produced by 97th Floor, a 20-year-old marketing agency that helps companies like McKinsey, Pluralsight, and Checkpoint know their customers, execute innovative campaigns, and drive profitable growth. If you have an allocated growth budget and product market fit, we'd love to do research and build a proposal for you. Visit us at 97thfloor.com. And if you enjoyed this episode, make sure to subscribe. See you next time.